Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams. Joining me today is Jeff Clossy.
Hey, Jay. It's great to be joining you today. How are you, man?
I'm doing great, man.
Good.
I floated in.
Yeah.
I just took a boat. I think it's funny because when we have the blizzards, the last time when we had the big blizzard, someone was snowmobiling up and down County B.
That's
wow. I love. I love when that happens, and you know, or when kids take their snowmobiles to school or something like that. But I do. There are days in the spring here where I feel like we could take a boat.
Yes, and today is definitely one of those. Yeah, on my drive to the Marinette Middle School this morning, I was just looking at the ditches full of water, like over by, especially by the River City's pool area. Woof, you can tell how much water we got when you look over there. It's really underwater.
It makes me think, do you think someone could actually kayak to work or school and portage? They'd just portage across streets and
Yeah,
stuff.
They'd have to be okay with some scraping.
Do you say portage or portage? You lived in Canada.
But I'm a Wisconsinite, so it's Portage, Wisconsin.
Portage, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So they could portage.
Yeah.
I just think it's funny when Canadians say portage.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's like they'd never heard the word before.
I know, right? I mean, that's always a fun debate of, do you say the word the way the original language said it, or do you say it the way that you say it? And we pick and choose.
Well, they definitely, my friends in Ottawa definitely say it portage, but they're also French speakers, so that's how they would say it.
Did they give you a hard time for saying portage?
Not at all. They're Canadians.
Did they think about
They probably
you?
Did.
They probably thought negatively about
I
you?
I probably said it differently, too.
They were probably like, oh, Americans.
Did you notice this morning, too, is one other thing about the season we're in. So I let my dogs out, and one wanted to come in, and one did not. And I was like, what is he doing out there? And he's just sitting. And it was just unbelievable, the sound this morning from the birds and the life.
Yes.
Oh my.
So noisy.
It was beautiful. I mean, it's just cool. Everything coming back to life again or coming out of, I think some of it's migration, right? They're back, but it was so loud and that was neat, but yeah, super wet, obviously.
Well, yeah, it's funny you say that because when I took Lydia to school, as we walked out, she was just standing outside listening. And I said, oh, for crying out loud, it's so noisy out here. Where do we have to go to get some peace and quiet?
I know, right?
she just kind of looked at me. I was being cheeky. Because it was so loud. I've noticed that with the frogs.
Yeah, they're out again.
Which is
it's
fun.
Neat.
It's fun. I mean, I did have a moment yesterday at soccer practice where I thought, look where we live. You know, you could hear the frogs. And then there's all these deer that just hang out at our practice field. And so they just kind of wait for us to be done, and then they watch. And then towards the end, when we're kind of winding down, they come out to the edge, and they just wait. And they come, and they, I mean, if it was a Disney movie, it would be really awesome, but it's not. So they leave things that are not as much fun on a soccer field.
That's true, they do. I noticed that too on ours, even in Marinette too, in the middle of town. Like, it's like that. We actually had a crane come flying in, making, you know, the crane sound during practice.
So great.
It is a beautiful thing. And, you know, it's worth slowing down a bit and just observing that. I think when you live here for a while, you can start to just, that's just normal, right?
Yeah.
But it's not normal for most people.
No.
Other places. So it's neat we get that, especially this time of year.
It really is. I mean, that's when I moved here and I just thought, wow, it's pretty incredible. And seeing, you know, everyone fishing down here on the Peshtigo River, and just thinking that this is most places I've lived in my life, I did not have. I mean, there were probably 20 deer. It was a ton of deer. They're just hanging out. And Judah forgot something at the practice field the other day, and we ran back to get it, and they were all in the middle of the field, and they all went sprinting away when we pulled up. But like jumped behind this berm, and then they're just peeking up over it. And I'm like, what in the Disney movie is going on here? Like, are they going to break out in song and dance? And it was fun. So
that's great, man.
So you got to slow down and you got to just appreciate it. You might say abide in it.
Yeah. It's mostly bug free right now too.
Oh, you didn't get my,
oh, I see. Abide. You're trying to transition.
I laid that on pretty thick. I thought that was pretty, good heavens. I know sometimes my transitions are way out of left field, but like that one I felt like was pretty solid.
That was good. So you're talking about abiding. So were you talking about the sermon?
Yeah. Well, I was trying to get
on
with it, because we were supposed to have a short podcast today. So we gotta get rolling.
You just set expectations.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you think I confused people on Sunday?
That's a great question.
We should ask somebody.
If only we had a live studio audience that we could poll.
I know.
I had some great conversations afterwards.
I did too. And I had a good question. And so we can get to that. I don't know if we want to do that. Or if we want to,
let's jump right into that.
Okay. Well, one of the questions that came up, and I'm not surprised this question came up, was why I mentioned how we're trying to launch a plan of spiritual formation for this fall. And the idea was, could we contain that to two time slots a week? And, you know, could we, so the big question that we're asking and that we're going to ask the church is, if you'll give us Sunday morning and Wednesday night, then we will make sure that you have every environment you need to follow Jesus and be formed as a disciple. And so somebody asked, like, well, why two times? You know, like, why not three? Why not four? Why not one? Why not whatever? And it's a great question. There's not a real biblical answer to it. I would say it's actually more of a missiological answer. And by that, I mean, you know, one of the things we teach students in missiology, or the idea of the mission of God being carried out to the nations, is you do cultural exegesis, which means you just learn about the culture and you understand the rhythms of the culture and you understand what are their rhythms? When are they at work? When are they at school? When are they available? What does their day-to-day life look like? How full is their day? How, you know, all those things. And that's the practical side of it. That doesn't have anything to do with, there's lots of other kinds of cultural exegesis, like worldview and what's the predominant religion and what do they value and all those things. But one piece of it is important, which is rhythm. You know, like if you're in Spain and you're thinking, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go door to door to businesses and evangelize, and I'm going to do it at 1:30 p.m. Because that's when I like to go door to door. You're not getting anywhere, right? Like, if you want to try to meet people for dinner and you go at 6 p.m., you're not going to find anybody, because that's not their rhythms. That's not how they work. They take a break in the afternoon. They eat dinner really late. They, you know, when you've been other places and I've been in other countries where you learn different rhythms.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really more what it is. We look at the rhythms that our people are in, and we want, the idea is we really want to be as efficient as possible for the equipping and training, because you want most of their life to be in the rhythms of their life, being salt and light where they are, right? We don't want people here six nights a week. And that's what ends up happening what you end up compromising is a church is faced with this decision of, do we only do some of the things that we think we should do to form people, or do we do all the things? And if we do all the things, then either a person's there for six nights a week, or they pick and choose which things, which happens a lot. So you might have somebody, so imagine if you have, okay, we have Sunday school classes, and then we have Wednesday night small groups, and then we have, you know, like I said, Monday night prayer meeting and Tuesday night leadership. Well, then you're left with, somebody might say, you know what, I really like Sunday school class, but I'm not going to be part of community, and I don't want to grow in my ability to lead others, and I don't want to pray. Well, that's not, you're not really being formed then. You're being like, it'd be like doing workouts and being like, I'm only working my biceps, and that's, I like curl day. So when we do curls, I'm doing that, but then the rest of the days I'm not doing it. So I don't know. I'm going around in circles a little bit there, but how would you make sense of what I just threw out there?
I mean, I think that's really important. And just to give people a little behind the curtain, you know, view, as we were processing this and really working on this and praying about this, what would be best for our church, right? What would honor Jesus and be best for our church? One of the things we were pushing up against, and was that idea that I think some people have felt, not everyone. So some people listening might have not felt this, but this expectation, maybe unspoken at various times in their walk with Jesus in the church, that they really do need to be in the church building 4 or 5 nights a week. And they do need to, and then you just keep filling the blank. The expectation can be felt, even if it's not stated, that if you're going to walk with Jesus here, this is what it means. And it does mean you're here all the time. And often in that environment, that kind of culture, the people who are seen as the most spiritually mature are the ones who are basically dwelling in the church building all the time. And so what we're saying is, you know, to be a disciple of Jesus, to walk with him, to follow him, and then to grow in that is actually every moment of your life. There's not like we enter that classroom session with him and then now we go to the next class. It's like, no, as you follow Jesus, it's actually everything. So what we're saying is together as a church, we are going to put our training times, our equipping times, our enjoying each other and doing some one another's into a couple time periods a week, so that actually the rest of following him, which is every other moment of your life, can happen. Like that we actually are free to do that, which means engaging our neighbors, right? It means serving in our communities. It means going to the grocery store and doing the normal things that you do, right? As just a human being. And all of that is part of the curriculum of Christlikeness. But together we're saying we're going to ask for 2 times for people that can join in together to do this together, because it's not an individual enterprise. So yeah, I think all that to clarify, that's why 2 times.
Yeah, and it simplifies. That kind of leads into another part that I wish I would have clarified, but hopefully now anyone listening to this can, if you wondered this, it can clarify it. And then if anybody else asks you, you can help clarify it. But we're not saying that those other things aren't going to keep happening, right? So we have like Legacy Group, which is some of our older saints who get together, and like, great. That's, you know, we have young adults who get together. We have a youth group. We have men's breakfast. We're not like all those things. Great. Continue. Like we have different Bible studies, people that are just gathered together. Some of them have been together for a long time. Some of them are, you know, newer. And actually this being more simplified and being more kind of focused in will help those things more, because then you kind of know, like, okay, here are the anchor things. These are the tracks we're running on. One of the metaphors I threw out there on Sunday afterwards in a conversation with somebody was, you know, think about a buffet. Then typically a church functions with their programs like a buffet. But we all know that if you go to a buffet and you just let a 9-year-old go through, or if you, well, 9-year-old, who are we kidding? If you just let me go through and you just say, pick whatever you want, like, it's not necessarily going to be balanced, right? Like, it's, and so essentially what we're trying to do is saying, like, man, all those other things are good, but we're going to be a little bit more like Golden Corral. Remember Golden Corral?
Yeah, you bet.
And you like order the steak and you get the steak. So the one thing Golden Corral didn't do is a vegetable, but imagine like you start with a plate of like, okay, here's your protein and here's your vegetables. And now here's this buffet that has other proteins and other vegetables and twice baked potatoes or mashed potatoes. And it has cherry pie and it has like stuff that's just fun to enjoy together. Some of it's just fun to enjoy. Some of it's really nutritious and some of it's very specific, you know, to dietary needs or whatever. But we're saying on Sunday morning and Wednesday night, like, that's, you know, they used to say the meat and the potatoes, but I think like the protein and the vegetables, like, you will do well with this. And the other stuff is more supplemental and more of like, you know, look, if you're still hungry and you want to go get some mashed potatoes, get them, man. Like, and if you want to get some quinoa over there, that's great. And if like, and so to me, that's kind of like, you know, the cherry pie would be like the mountain biking, you know, guys are maybe going mountain biking or whatever. And then there might be some other really healthy things or like these Bible studies that are deep and rich. And, you know, it's like another chicken kebab or something, you know, like. And so I kind of want to give that picture that we're saying, look, these are your first things. And then everything else is kind of like, as some people are in a season of life where they have more time, than other people. You know, like right now I think about it is not hard for somebody to end up being here four nights in a week. Like we have people who volunteer with our youth or with our kids on Wednesday nights and who are like in a gospel community on a Thursday night and who are in like some kind of ministry team leadership, whether it's elders or deacons or, you know, children's ministry leadership or whatever on a Tuesday night. And they might be in a worship team. And so they're here on Saturday morning. And that's not that hard to do. At the same time, we have people who feel like, well, I don't know where, like, it's kind of like going to a buffet and you just don't, I don't know, it's overwhelming. There's too much. And so for both people, we want to be able to say, hey, here's the core. This is your first commitment. And then you're free, like if you want to do other things, you can, but if you don't know what else, if you don't know what to do, like do this. And if you do know what else you're doing and you want to be doing those things, then great. You know, we're just trying to make that a little bit more, more efficient.
Yeah. I think those are really good clarifications, you know, like situating all the different things we're doing. And I think that I was thinking the word supplemental. And so I'm glad that's where you kind of went. Like it's not that they're not important or they couldn't right. be beneficial. They're great. You know, they're great. And I think what we're saying though, is we realize every life is unique, right? And every family is unique. Every person is unique. And so not everyone can do four nights, right? Some people only have a couple. So what our ask is can you give us two? And one of them for most people, you're already giving, right? Yeah, you're already morning, here Sunday morning.
Yeah.
So really for most people, it's going to be asking for one more night.
Yeah. Or this may make it less like the overlapping of things and trying to be more efficient that way. And look, I get it that, you know, and I did give that disclaimer of that there are people who can't make that happen. We're just saying we think in talking to people and just being here for a while, I think it's probably like 85% of the people can do that rhythm. I mean, it's amazing that still in 2026, at least here, practices get out a little earlier on Wednesday.
Yep.
We still don't have, it's not normal to have games scheduled. Now I realize with like travel teams and that kind of thing, it gets a little fuzzy on that. They don't tend to be, but school as a whole, like regular stuff tends to be pretty respectful of Wednesday night still. And so there's a lot, it's a culturally common thing. It's not weird when people say, oh, I have church things on Wednesday night. That's not weird here, whether the Catholic or Lutheran or Baptist or whatever. And so there's a normalcy to that rhythm. And I'm actually really excited about it because I think what's going to happen is it's going to allow us, there's so many things in so many ways that we've wanted to develop people that we just haven't because we don't want to just add one more thing on the plate. So, and we'll get into some of this, but these are some of the teasers of like, man, I would love to teach a class on, you know, church history or have that, you know, available. But like, what do we do with that? Where do we, like, now we have Monday night academic study? Like, what do we do? So I think that was all part of the deal, was saying that this needs to be a part of our normal rhythms. And I'm really excited about it. So I want to encourage people to, like, as we kind of go through this, we are obviously talking about the why, because we are who we are. Like, this is what we, this is what we do. You know, anybody who's been here for very long knows we don't just do things because of external, because it seems like a good idea or, for pragmatic sake or anything like that. It's like, we want to first start with, well, what are we actually trying to produce here? How has that actually happened? Not what's the best program for that, but like what actually historically, biblically, you know, because turns out early church made a lot of disciples and they did not have any subscription to any Bible study or they didn't have any of those things. They literally didn't have their own Bibles. Yeah, so,
or buildings.
They made disciples. And there's something really beautiful about that. I'm not saying that those resources are wrong or bad. You know, like I think they can be gifts that we receive, But sometimes we become a little dependent on that. And so we forget that, like, you don't actually what you need, the raw materials for discipleship is we need the Holy Spirit and we need the community of believers and we need God's word. Like, there's not a lot else we need. Like, we need a community of people indwelled by the Holy Spirit. And I used to say this way. I didn't use the illustration. Oh, I wish I would have on Sunday. I've said it before, where if we tossed a Bible out, I said that a long time ago to kind of illustrate my point. If on a Sunday morning, if I just took a Bible and I tossed it out into the crowd, and you just took the people who were within, you know, a couple arms reach, and just grabbed those 10, 12 people, could they take that Bible and go off and figure out how to follow Jesus with just that? With just that crew of people and the Bible and the Spirit dwelling in them, could they? And they should be able to. And if we're not able to, that's always been kind of one of my measuring sticks, is like, and we should assume that in that group are going to be some people who aren't believers. But could the people in there who are believers share the gospel? Could they teach people how to read the Bible? Could they teach people how to pray? Could they teach people what it looks like to walk with Jesus? And if the answer is no, if any church is in a situation where the answer is no, then, like, that, I think that's a problem. Like, I think that's an issue, and that's what we're kind of, you know, that's what we're trying to aim for.
Yeah, and one of the things I loved about where you went in the sermon on Sunday is you really spent time clarifying, what are we doing here? Like, what is our primary desire? What is our primary, like, why are we gathering, right? And I think that's a really important question for all of us to consider, because when we, especially if we're in the habit of gathering on Sunday morning and gathering as a church community, you know, I don't know, we're always super thoughtful about that because it can just be what we do. Well, we're here because it's what we do, but I love how you boiled it down to, we're here because we're disciples of Jesus and we want to make more disciples of Jesus. And that's where the translation is so important for us, because, like, what you just described, so having the Bible physically, having the Holy Spirit dwelling within us, when we look at the New Testament and what discipleship was for the first followers of Jesus, it was so clear who was his disciple or not. And the way that those people are even described is so, it makes it so obvious, because there was such a physical component to, there is a man named Jesus and I will either follow him and spend time with him or I will not. And some people chose not to. And it was very obvious that they were saying by that choice, I'm not going to be his disciple. But others did, right? And we read about them and we still use that terminology. So walk with Christ, you said, and you said follow Christ. That's because that's the terminology they used, because they literally walked right next to the man as he walked around and did things. And as they did that, they took on his ways. But they only did that because they actually desired to be with him and they desired to be like him, right? And so right now, we're living in 2026 in Northeast Wisconsin, right? In Marinette, Peshtigo, Ocana, all these areas, God has worked in us who follow Jesus that same desire. So that to me is so crucial. Like, we have this desire to be with Jesus and to be like him, to take on his ways, but we don't have what they had. It's different. So they didn't have what we had either. Like, they didn't have a Bible that was bound, right? That they could just look at the New Testament, but they walked with him, and we can still walk with him, even though we can't find him physically somewhere located in town where we go meet with him. And I think that's where sometimes discipleship and being disciple can become nebulous or just like an idea that needs fleshing out. And that's what I think you did such a great job, Jay, on Sunday, of giving it some like flesh, like giving it some tangible, what does that actually mean? Because it ends up being a religious word mm-hmm. without action attached to it, like being a disciple.
Yeah, that I would say that if there's nothing else that someone got from it, which is was the idea. Sorry, I'll say that first, and then I'll say why. What else was powerful about it to me in the whole service was this connection to Jesus. So, like, abiding in Jesus. So all those other things that we talk about, a disciple, if they're detached from Jesus, they're worthless. love is without love, without the love of Christ, you're a noisy gong or clanging cymbal, which, you know, when Paul talks about that, he's saying you could prophesy, you could heal people, you could do these miracles. Like, it's amazing, you know, what he's saying. You could do all these things, but if you don't have this love, the love of Christ, then it's worthless. And so I just thought it was incredible then, you know, Sean shared his testimony and I didn't know what he was going to say. And for him to articulate that, I was doing all the things, acknowledging all the things, but it wasn't real because I didn't walk with Jesus. Like, I didn't know him. And then I love that Sarah chose Abide as the song. Like, she's sitting there going, well, I don't know what the sermon's going to be about. I know it's about, the only thing I know is it's about what is a real disciple. And so she chooses that. You think about all the songs she could have chosen, mm-hmm. of, you know, songs of, you know, walking in the Spirit or trusting him or doing things like a Great Commission type song or, beholding God. I mean, there's so many things. And in her mind, she's thinking, well, if there's one thing you got to do as a disciple, it's abide. And I think that's, like, I really wanted that thread to be there. And so when we talked about be, do, and know, that these are not just individual silos of like, okay, now I'm going to work on my character and I'm supposed to be this moral person and I'm supposed to do these acts of service. And then I'm supposed to understand these theological concepts, that it's, that none of it is detached from the person of Jesus. And if we get that, then I think it starts to transform everything, because now it's not just, oh, I'm supposed to be kind, and so then I bring my own definition of what kindness is, or I accept the world's definition. We see this all the time with love. The word love is just, it is used in so many ways that are not at all what Christ is, and we will define it to suit kind of our desires and what we think makes sense. And if we're not careful, because you said there are a lot of people that didn't want to follow Jesus. And I think that's the big thing, is if you don't want Jesus, then you don't want to be his disciple. I mean, that's just an obvious thing. And that's the whole point. Mm-hmm. And I know, like, you, especially, man, I saw this all the time, campus ministry, but also a lot of places, we see it now all the time. There's a lot of conversions to Christianity, the religion, because of things that they want. And they may even be good things. I want my marriage to be better. I want to be free of this addiction. I want to find meaning in my life. Those are all really good seeking questions, but they're not converting questions, and they're not discipleship. Like, there's discipleship in those things, but only connected to Jesus. The question about being a Christian is, do I want Jesus? Do I want his life? Do I want to pursue him? And if the answer is yes, well, then all those other things fall into place, right? And I know you've seen this. I mean, I picture the college student, the one that finds community, and they kind of convert to a club, mm-hmm. not because they're disingenuous or they're bad people or anything, but they just, here are nice people who live in a way that they like, and they feel better about themselves when they're with them, because we go and we serve and I get to learn some things, and this is really interesting, versus the student who clearly has had an interaction with the living God and with Jesus and says, I don't know what it's going to mean, but I want him. Like, I have to follow him. And it's very different.
It's massively different. And, you know, you're pointing out again, this all hinges on a person. So, like, if our reason for being a Christian, like, getting back to, like, that bigger tent that you were getting at, the Christian religion, is not ultimately about a person, Jesus, then you may be in danger of missing it. You know, it might be that you just can't articulate it. And you know, that sometimes happens. but you also may not be really following Jesus. You may be following customs or a group of people or something else. There's a lot of reasons that a person could find themselves in a church body that are not related at all to, I want to be with Jesus and I want to become like him. There's all kinds of reasons. And so what we're saying and what you said on Sunday was we're trying to help like point to him in a really practical, tangible way. This is how together we could do this. And that's what we're going to be, you know, over the next weeks, really unpacking of what could that actually look like? And what do we see it looking like here in this place, in this time, with all the unique, wonderful things that God is doing right now? I mean, it was so beautiful. Like, yeah, I also didn't know what Sean was saying. I was really excited when he came up there with like five sheets of paper. Right. I was like, oh boy, this could be, and knowing Sean, I knew that he'd be wise about how long it would take. You know,
which,
like,
by
I was
the way, we should clarify, we did have an elder read it and go over it with him and knew. So like, yes. We don't just like willy nilly say like, yeah, well, you know.
Sure, why not? Let's baptize you. Not at all, actually. Right. It's quite an extended conversation, and he could testify to that for himself, how extended that conversation was in his case, right? Yes. But we also don't say, tell us exactly what you will say up front, because that can be different than a private conversation. And I was so excited to see that he had all these thoughts prepared. And Sean's testimony, I know it moved people.
Yeah.
I know it did. I had good conversations afterwards. What so excites me about that, about who he is, I mean, he's a friend, right? And I love him. But he is one of many that God is moving in powerfully in our midst. And so I think it's because, and you heard it in his testimony, he is after the person of Jesus. He is after his life and after he's, that's what he's going after. That's what he desires. So one of the things that even coming into this podcast, I wanted to say again, we've said it before, but I don't think we can say it enough. If you hear that, like being a disciple of Jesus means you desire to be with him and you desire to become like him. So those are desire questions and statements. If you are thinking to yourself right now, I don't know if I desired that. That's actually, I want to encourage you in that and to flesh that out. And if you find that where you are is you desire to want him and you desire to become like him, but right now you don't quite want that, begin praying and asking God to give you the desire of your heart. I would just say, like, really practically, just to make sure we don't lose anyone along the way, if you're realizing, man, I've never thought about, am I actually his disciple or not? Great question to ask. It's a great question to ask.
Yeah, that's the want. Do I want this? Do I want to want this?
Yes.
I found that in following Jesus, that question is often so critical, because in a moment, I'm at a crossroads and I have to make a decision of, am I going to say this thing that I know, but I really want to say it, but I know deep down I shouldn't. Well, if I just ask myself, like, do I want to say this? I'm like, well, yeah, I want to say it. Like, but do I want to say it? Like, exactly. do I wish that I was in a place right now where I didn't want that and I did want this. I wanted this better thing. And I think that question right there is so critical for us, because in any given day, I mean, yeah, we could look at our lives and we could say, like, do I want Jesus? Well, I don't know. Maybe you don't know what that means. Maybe you haven't seen an example of that. Maybe you're still checking it out. Like, well, but do you want him? Like, and then sometimes I'll even go back a step further. Do you want him? Like, do you wish you were a person who deep down really did want to live in this way and be joined to his life? And I think, here's why it's so critical. We don't want, I mean, this should sound obvious to anybody listening, but I don't think we always understand the depth of what we mean by it. We don't want to preach a false gospel. And so often we think of a false gospel only being about information and facts. And it is that. If I preach that Jesus didn't raise from the dead, or that there's another way to heaven, that would be a false gospel. But there's plenty of ways that the enemy perverts the gospel. And one of them is a false gospel that detaches from Christ. not just his work on the cross, but his life, right? And his nature and his character and his, and being formed into him. That's a false gospel. So if somebody says, for example, man, my life is a mess. I really want to turn it around. And we say, well, yeah, you can do that in Christ. But what they're hearing is, oh, if I convert to Christianity and start doing this religion, then everything will be better. Well, that's a false gospel. And if I let you, and you know, go into that, that's dangerous, and that's not really loving, right? And then the other thing that we run into is, then if you are that person, like, says, no, I want Jesus, I desperately want to know the real risen Christ, and I want to follow him, and we have shaped our church around the other, like, because we want to keep people and draw people, and you know, we don't want to rock the boat or whatever, because, you know, we want to cater to what people want. Well, then we're really failing the person who's like, I want the real Jesus. And in my experience, people who are just like, I like, how many times have you had a person say, when you know, okay, they've had an interaction with Jesus and they want him. One of the ways that I know is if they ask to meet, I'll say, like, well, when are you free? And they'll be like, anytime. They'll figure it out. What do I do? And they'll say things like, what do I do? Those are questions that a person who is like, just encountered Jesus, and they're what do I do? Where do I go? Versus a person who then says that, but then they're just going to continue on with their life. That's like the crowds that follow Jesus, and they're like, oh man, he's so great. And then they're just kind of like, they go on with their lives. And I don't say that to like shame anybody or guilt anybody. It's just like, we have to identify what is actually going on. Where are people actually? And then who are we forming things for? So if our goal is to form disciples, then everything we should do should be towards people who want to be disciples. And what is a disciple? A person who wants to take on the life of Christ. And so it's so strange to me that we would think, oh, but a church also should be for a place for people who want to just do social justice or want to just learn theology or whatever. And it's like, well, no, I mean, we do those things, but as a flowing out of the life of Christ. And like, think about how much we're failing. You know, you see this in schools a lot. Like, how sad is it when you think of a classroom where there are students who really want to learn? It doesn't matter about how intelligent they are or how gifted they are, but they want to learn. And then you always have students in any given classroom that their goal is, I want to get to the end of this class. Well, unfortunately, they have to be in the same classroom. And if the teacher is spending all their time trying to get the person who doesn't want to be there to like just not be disruptive, or they do all kinds of things, whereas you have a few students who are like, but I just really want to learn. And imagine how much better the class would be if the teacher said, hey, look, everyone's welcome here, but this class is designed for the people who want to actually learn this and want to grow. And I think that's, at its core, that's our philosophy of ministry. It's the parable of the great banquet. Like, everyone's welcome. If you aren't a Christian and you want to be here, we love having you here. If you're not sure if you want to be a disciple, you've always been like culturally a Christian, but you're just like, I don't know you're welcome. Like, everybody's welcome. But what we're designing things for on Sunday morning and on, you know, Wednesday night and anything else, we're designing it for the person who says, I want Jesus. I want that life. And if that's 10 people, then, which is different than a business, right? Like, if a restaurant owner realizes that only 10% of his customers want tacos and they'd rather have like something else, you're like, well, they're going to do the something else because you're going to fail. But in a church, it's not that way. So if we discovered that only 10 people really want to follow Jesus, well, then we'll have a church of 10 people, mm-hmm. and some people who are seeking.
Yeah. And thank God that's not the situation
not.
We're in, right?
It's not like, the situation. Even as I was talking up there, I mean, you can tell. You can tell the feedback. And I can tell that the church as a whole is with me in this. They're like, yes, they want, they like, there is a general, I feel like we have a critical mass of people who want to follow Jesus. So yeah, I hope nobody hears that and says like, it's not a browbeating of like, well, we should, no, I think overall our culture is, that's why we can do this. And it doesn't, I don't feel like next week we're going to have half the number of people because I feel like, you know.
Well, nor do we mean that it means that we've all arrived. You know what I mean? It's, you know, I think there's a way of hearing what we're saying as like, well, you guys must think you have it together, right? And it's like, actually, it's quite the opposite. You know, to be a disciple of Jesus is to realize that our life is not the way it was meant to be. And to follow him in his ways is to take on his life to become who we were meant to be and to become how God designed us to be and to enter into that fullness of life. So it's actually an acknowledgement to say, I want to follow him of lack. Like I need what he has and I don't have it. So I will submit to him and his ways and his life because I need that. And that's what it's an acknowledgement of. I love your example, by the way, of like the person saying, now what do I do? Because that is the obvious next step. When you have a desire for something, you will ask, how can I get that thing? What is the next step that I take? And we do that in every area of our life. When we want something, we say, how do I get it? And just like I was saying earlier, it was very obvious for the first followers of Jesus who wanted to be there. Like they had the desire and they showed and demonstrated their desire by actually physically walking with him. So it's like, so since we don't actually have the physical Jesus to go walk up to, we will make other decisions and it will be obvious to everyone around us that we've made that decision. Not just like, I think we often think in the fruit, which the fruit will come, right? The fruit of the Spirit that you read, but it's also in the way we just arrange our affairs. The things we start to prioritize will actually require some choices that will be yeses to some things that will result in no's in other things just by consequence of the yes. And that question of what do I do now is an example of what that looks like. It's to start to take on his ways, right?
Dude, that right there, oh man, that makes me think, how do we get that worked into a message? But so that's the weight that we feel. So when somebody says, what do? I feel such a sense of responsibility to that person to only tell them what they really need to do. Because the normal church way of doing it is like, hey, get involved in all these things. But these things are like, they're, like I said, just throwing things at the wall. And I've done that before. But one of the values of the kingdom parables that we say a lot is this treasure hidden in a field that like upon finding it, you go and sell everything you have. I want to make sure that when we say, hey, you should do this, I want you to be here. That those are weighty things. Those are big things. And I feel like I'm putting my reputation on the line as much as if somebody asked me for a recommendation of like, hey, should I hire this person? If I say like, yes, you should, you won't regret it. Like, I mean that. Now, if you ask me for a reference and I don't think you're a very good fit, I'll probably be more generic about it. I'm not going to necessarily but to say, like, no, trust me. Like that's, I don't know that people feel the weight of that. I think sometimes it can feel like, and I understand it, that they might think, oh, well, what we care about is people showing up at our programs or like attendance so that it makes us feel like we're doing a good job or we're earning it. It's none of that. I feel this weight when somebody says, I want to know Jesus. How do I know him? That whatever I tell you really matters. And I feel a little bit like in a doctor's office, right? Like if you have some kind of illness or something, or you want to get healthier or whatever, there's lots of things you can do, but you hope that the doctor would say, okay, that they're taking that as trust, that there's a trust there. Like, I'm trusting you of what, like, just tell me what to do. And so I hope that right there get like people understand kind of the way that we think about that. I want to be able to say when somebody says, I want to be able to say like, do this. And that's why we do like be at worship on Sunday morning. not because church attendance is what God cares about. I'll get to talk about this more on Sunday morning of why do we say that? Why is that the first thing we tell people? You want to follow Jesus? Be at worship on Sunday morning. That goes against so much of what I used to think. I'll be honest, like I used to not, you know, because I think I was pushing back against a church attendance idea of like, well, I show up and it'll just happen. But then I realized, oh, I'm not actually seeing it for what it is. I'm buying into the perverted version of it and then saying, well, yeah, it doesn't matter if you go to the, if you go to the perverted version of this thing and in a way that you have no desire to actually be there, well then yeah, it's pointless. Why are you doing it? But if you're going to ask me where to start, that's where they started.
Isn't it interesting? And I agree with you, by the way, about just feeling that like it goes against some things because of that same idea. And like, I think at least what I'm thinking of when I think that, and we can save most of this conversation for next week, but I just, it has been used as a mark of righteousness rather than a means of growth in Jesus and in experiencing his life. And if it's a mark, like it's a signifier of I am a good person, that's what I feel like. I don't want to recommend that because that's not what we're getting at there. But if it is a means of entering into the life of Christ with other people entering into that life and worshiping him, then it's not a signifier. It is a very important, like situated, like environment where we need, and we can't replace it with anything else. So yeah, I'm excited for Sunday too. I'll leave it at that. But
well, yeah, that's like quiet times too.
Exactly.
Right? Like, I mean, yep. You and I are from the same era of the love-hate relationship with quiet times where they were used as the marker of righteousness. What time did you get up? How long is your quiet time? What do you do during your quiet time? And then the rejection of them so that people felt like, well, so all of a sudden you're rejecting spending like specific time with Jesus and in his word. Like, well, that doesn't seem like a good, like good path either. So yeah, you're right. We can turn anything into a religious marker. And then we tend to then throw those out.
Mm-hmm.
The baby out with the bathwater kind of thing. Sorry, I cut you off on that.
No, that's what I was thinking too. I mean, I think there's probably many people listening who have experienced that in their own life. And so I guess maybe my word of encouragement, if that's you, like if you can relate to what we're saying there, I would encourage you to really attune your ears to what God might be saying as we walk through this series to you personally about your walk with Jesus, you know. And it's not like there are some people in the room who need discipleship and there are some who don't. It's actually every single one of us in the room needs that right now with Jesus, every single one of us. And we all need to be attuned to how is he going to lead us? Because I trust, and Jay, I know you trust. That's why we get up to preach. We trust that God will speak to his people and he will lead them together. And that's what I'm so excited about. Like these weeks together is how we will get to see that unfold and how he leads very specifically and very tangibly people to follow him in some new ways.
Yeah. I had a conversation on Sunday. Our buddy Nick, who is now off in seminary and has moved away and was a part of our church for a while. And he's back because his brother sadly passed away. And I know Nick wouldn't mind me sharing this. It's what he's training. He's training to go into ministry and everything. So but he said, just is striking with all of the theological education that I'm going through and that my brother now knows in a way that I can't even imagine, knows God in a way that I'll never. It's amazing that idea. So like when you think about everyone in that room on a Sunday morning, the most Christ-like person, like if there was a scoring system, if an angel of the Lord came down and shone a light on and said, this is the person who's been most transformed. They are nowhere near the least, the least in heaven. They're nowhere near. It's like the gap between that. It's like such a, I remember saying to somebody one time, it's like when I was talking to a friend a long time ago about how they felt like they just weren't as good of a Christian as somebody else or whatever. And they were newer in the faith or whatever. And I was like, okay, let's even say that they're ahead of you. And let's say they're all the way. We were sitting in a parking lot. I remember like saying like, let's say they're all the way at the over, you know, where do you think they are? Like, oh, they're over there at the other end of this big parking lot. Like, okay. And the least Christ-like person in heaven is like at the North Pole. So okay, they're a little bit ahead of you, but like imagine if you're like, we're on a trek to the North Pole and you're like, oh, I'm so far behind that person. They're at the north end of the parking lot. Like there are, look how far, like it's, that's the boat that we're all in. And yes, there is a sense in which we do have people who've been walking with Jesus for a long time. There are people who've been formed in Christ in ways that we want to emulate and follow. That's what Paul says, be imitators of me. Like follow me as I follow Christ. Like that is an important thing. We should have people that we look up to spiritually, but not people we put on a pedestal, not people we worship, and not people that we look at and we say, well, they're better than me, or God loves them more than me, or like they're just a better Christian than me. It's that, no, I want to grow, and they're kind of a marker, because sometimes the North Pole can feel like that feels like a long ways away. And so sometimes we need something closer, which is why Jesus became flesh, right? Like God becomes flesh because of his kindness. He gives us something closer so we can see and touch and watch. And then he gives us one another so that we can do that. So I'm really excited for these next few weeks, man. You're going to be taking a couple of the environments. Did I mention them on Sunday? Did I actually put them up there? I think I did. Or did I not?
I don't think we did yet.
No. All right. Whatever. I couldn't remember what I was going to do in that and what I ended up doing. But the environments we're going to be unpacking over the next 4 weeks, which are worship, community, classroom, and everyday life. Here's the one thing I want to say as we launch into that, and I'll do this on Sunday when I talk about the first one, worship. The environments, I would make the argument that they are non-negotiable. This is what we see in Scripture throughout the history of God's people. These are the environments in which people have been formed. These have been core environments that were. It's very clear that God says, like, this is where I'm forming you in this environment. The methods of how we facilitate those environments, those are all kinds of negotiable. And that's where it comes down to, like, okay, well, can I get on board? Am I willing to, you know, it's a little bit like spending time together as a family is really, it's a non-negotiable. If you want to bond together as a family, you have to spend time together. Does that mean you have to play a particular board game? Does it mean you have to go to a particular restaurant or take a particular vacation to a particular lake? No, those things are all negotiable. Like families can bond in a lot of different ways, but a family chooses how they're going to do it. And so you're going to say with your family, like, hey, we go to the lake house. That's how we bond. We do this every summer. We always go up here for this. Well, they're not a better family than a family that Monday night is game night. Like but they each are doing that. But what's non-negotiable is a family, if they want to bond, they have to spend time together. There's no substitute for that. So the environment of being together, removed from the busyness of your life, whether that's on a vacation or, you know, where you check all your phones and everything and you turn the internet off and you have dinner together, whatever it is, there's no substitute for that environment. How that environment is facilitated, lots of options. And so that's kind of what we're going to be unpacking, is this series is about the environments that are non-negotiable. The environments that are, like, you can trust us and lean on us that there's no substitute. Nobody can say, yeah, I just don't really like the environment of worship, so I'm not going to participate in that. Like, well, that's going to be a problem. And we got to figure that out, because, like, that's how God's people have been formed, you know, or community. Like you just can't, or like the everyday life when we get to that, of like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do all that on Sundays. I'll do Sundays and Wednesday nights, but the rest of my life is just mine. Like I'll be a Sunday, Wednesday Christian. I've been a Sunday Christian. Now I'm going to be a Sunday, Wednesday Christian. Like that's one more day. but the rest of it, I'm not. So like the point being, it's all, so we're going to talk about those environments and then how we're going to facilitate them is more of just a logistical thing for our church family, of us saying like, hey, this is how we're going to do it, because we can't do everything. And I'm excited about it.
Me too. I can't wait to do it together.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. All right. Well, hopefully, I'm sure that there will be more questions that'll come up. Please ask them. You know, I'm really thankful that we have this podcast, like this rhythm of this, because it'll give us a chance to, I think this series more than most will be a place to clarify things and receive questions from people and be able to learn, like, okay, what was it that people understood, what they didn't understand? So please help us and ask us these questions. Fill out a communication card online or in person, or email us at connect@faithpeshtigo.com. And we will take all those into account. So we appreciate you taking the time to listen. We hope that it's been helpful to you. Until next time, grace and peace.